I wish I was in the land of cotton. Old times there are not forgotten. Look away, look away, look away.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Jedediah Purdy, who's a professor of law at Duke University, focusing on constitutional, environmental, and property law. He's been a fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School, an ethics fellow at Harvard University, and a visiting professor at Yale Law School and Harvard Law School. His forthcoming book is The American Environmental Imagination, and he has an article at the Huffington Post, Why I Got Arrested in Raleigh. The states are the new front line. Welcome to Background Briefing, Jedediah Purdy.
Thanks a lot, Ian. Hi.
Hi. And this is the sixth week of protests at the Capitol in Raleigh, and you were arrested on Moral Monday, and along with, 88 other people.
That's right.
So am I correct in framing this as a harbinger of what's happening in the state of North Carolina, as a model for aggressive Republican right-wing governance that could be a harbinger of what America will look like if the Koch brothers and Tea Party politicians like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz are able to take over the federal government?
That seems fair to me. I think the agenda that the North Carolina state legislature is running is basically the Tea Party game plan, point for point. And it's also the right-wing side of the 2011 election contest. One thing that strikes me about what's been happening here is that, in a way, we're replaying the fight that progressives narrowly won in 2012 on the state level, with the refusal of Medicaid extension, which is basically revisiting the Obamacare issue on the state level, with tax reform in a regressive direction, with voter suppression. The whole set of issues that the two parties have been fighting about at the national level are getting repeated here.
And, of course, the House has voted 37 times to repeal Obamacare,
yeah.
And the House is pretty much dominated by the Tea Party. But just to give our audience an idea of what the North Carolina Republicans, and they've got the trifecta, they've got the governor, the Senate, and the Assembly. So they've already eliminated earned income tax credits for 900,000 North Carolinians, declined Medicaid coverage for 500,000, privatized public health care in the state. Unemployment benefits for 165,000 in the state have been cut, and they have the fifth highest unemployment rate in the country. They've cut pre-K education for 30,000 kids while shifting $90 million from public education to voucher schools, which, of course, the Christian right believe in homeschooling and that kind of thing. I've cut taxes for the top 5% while raising taxes on the bottom 90%. They have also allowed for guns to be purchased without a background check and carried in parks, playgrounds, restaurants, and bars. And they're doing away with public financing of judicial races, as well as what you mentioned, a slew of voter suppression. Some of it's quite pernicious, where parents of college kids will get fined if their kids vote at college and not at home, which, of course, is flagrant suppression. And they've even got a ban on incompetent voters now. That what the hell does that mean?
Yes, I think it's just another way to intimidate people. It's just another way to try to make people afraid to vote or provide bases for Republican poll watchers to harass potential voters and drive them away. As you know, we know what this is about. It's about trying to ensure that what narrowly happened here in 2008, where North Carolina went for Barack Obama, by about 14,000 votes statewide after not having voted for a Democrat since 1976, won't happen again for another 12 or 16 years, even though the state demographically is trending in a Democratic direction. So it really is a voter suppression effort.
And again, I've
one. Yeah, go on.
No, sorry. Just continue.
I was just going to say, I think in this respect, the state Republican Party is a bit of a microcosm of the National Republican Party in another way, which is that they're on the way out in this form in the medium term because their constituency is shrinking. It's shrinking demographically and it's shrinking ideologically as people lose interest in issues like sexual orientation equality. So they're doing all they can to constitutionalize their position on the one hand with things like a same-sex marriage ban amendment that passed here last year. And then at the same time to ram through both the most radical measures they can while they have the legislature in their control and to try to compromise democracy so that it'll take longer for trends to catch up with them. So that seems to be the game plan.
Well, there's a surreal nature to it, though, in as much as they've passed legislation banning scientific a scientific understanding that global warming is behind the changing weather and the rising sea. I mean, that's a bit like King Canute trying to hold back the tide, isn't it?
It's just like, and I doubt it's going to work any better for the North Carolina legislature than it worked for him.
So, again, I'm speaking with Jedediah Purdy, who's a professor of law at Duke University, and he's also been a fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School, ethics fellow at Harvard University, a visiting professor at Yale Law School and Harvard Law School. His forthcoming book is The American Environmental Imagination, and he has an article at the Huffington Post, Why I Got Arrested in Raleigh, The States Are the New Front Line. Now, the Koch brothers have an ally down there, and of course the Koch brothers have funded ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council.
Right.
I think isn't one of the leaders of the legislature on the board of ALEC?
Probably so. I don't know offhand. Certainly, the Koch brothers' ally here,
right,
Art Pope, who is a very wealthy dime store magnate, basically, who's put tens of millions of dollars into financing the right wing in North Carolina, has been at the center of all of this and is part of that national network, and was immediately appointed budget director of North Carolina, which makes him the most powerful appointed official in the state, after basically bankrolling and strategizing the Republicans' win.
Well, the fellow that I was thinking of, his name is Tom Tillis. He's a speaker of the North Carolina House, and he's a board member of the American Legislative Exchange Council. So, you know, they pass or they germinate all of this right-wing laws across the country. And when they get hold of a state, this is what happens, what you're getting arrested for, and what growing numbers of North Carolinians are protesting every Monday on Moral Monday. The governor, of course, have dismissed you all as outsiders. Right?
Yes. Well, I've lived here for about a decade, and quite a number of North Carolina natives were arrested with me. In fact, I shared a holding cell, a seven-man holding cell, with a North Carolinian who was involved in the original Greensboro sit-ins back in the very early 1960s at the beginning of the civil rights movement. So not only are people North Carolinians, they actually represent the very best traditions of the South.
Well, there are also, I spoke earlier on this along the same subject about, and the first time I covered what's going on down there was Dr. Charles van der Horst, professor of medicine at UNC, and he's a world-renowned AIDS researcher, and he was arrested as well. I guess this is going to continue. It feels like the majority, obviously, even if it's demographically shrinking, have elected these people. And the strategy then is to just try and alert not just North Carolinians but the entire country about this is what happens. This is the Petri dish if these aggressive Tea Party Republicans take over. And What I find extraordinary about them is their meanness, their vindictiveness, their cruelty. Why do they want kids, kindergarten kids, not to be fed, not to have education? Why do they – the money they get for Medicare comes from the federal government. It doesn't cost them anything. Why are they denying that to their own people?
Pure wrong-headed principle. I mean, I agree with you. It is extremely inhumane. And to me, it is almost unimaginable that you look at the fact that the Medicaid refusal statistically is going to cause 2,000 avoidable deaths in North Carolina just next year. I don't see how you go ahead and do that. But this is one of the things that can happen when you are blinded by what you think is principle. This is a very ideological, hyper-partisan legislature. And in their view, refusing Medicaid is about beating Barack Obama on a state-level rematch. And apparently that matters a lot to them.
Well, I know I've tried to understand what the way that Tom Coburn thinks. He's filibustered about 100-plus bills in the Senate, and he has this same similar hyper-Christian idea that the deficit is worse for kids than the fact that the kids who were killed in the Oklahoma tornado didn't have a safe room in their school, and when and visiting the victims, Coburn said, you know, that the kids that died, really, their greatest threat was the deficit. I mean, I'm serious. I'm not making this up.
Yeah, no, they you're absolutely right. They do think that deficit reduction has become a moral issue on the right, resembling the kind of moral issue that climate change is, and in my view should be, on the left. It's the issue that symbolizes whether we're looking out for our kids. But looking out for the next generation is obviously not as simple as just finding some places to slash spending. It's about building and about maintaining a decent natural world and a decent social world. And it's pretty clear that's where this legislature is falling down.
Well, but the modest attempts at dealing with, for example, global warming, for example, out here in California, you know, this where we have considerable number of hybrids and electric cars, and you see more and more of them on the roads every day.
The
state legislative encouraged that, and they've been doing this for years. And because California is a big state, it's forced Detroit to make, you know, less gas guzzlers. But here you have the North Carolina legislature now turning back the clock and putting an extra tax on hybrid car drivers because they don't consume enough gasoline.
Yes. And of course, there's some kind of rationale, which is that if they consumed more gasoline, they would be paying more gas tax for road construction. And I suppose by that logic, next will come after people who like to ride their bicycles. But I think this example and the great example you pulled out of the tax that gets slapped on parents if their children vote where they go to school rather than where they live is a superficial irony that actually shows how much vindictiveness and how much culture war there is in the Tea Party's agenda, that they ran on and their touchstone is being against taxation, but they're perfectly willing to use the tax code in a punitive way to go after people they don't like, to go after students' families for student voting, to go after environmentalist liberals who drive hybrids. It's a culture war peeking into the tax code.
Well, but they're also on the other side, on the other end of the scale, they use the tax code to reward billionaires and cut their taxes. And that's, of course, the great irony of the Tea Party in the Congress. They came across as insurgents outraged by what happened on Wall Street in 2008, and they end up as the most faithful executors of the agenda of the Koch brothers and other billionaires in the United States Congress.
Yeah, their constituency doesn't like Wall Street and doesn't like crony capitalism. And I think their constituency is right to be angry about those things and right to have a real populist edge to its anger right now. But ideologically, the Tea Party is a libertarian movement, an economic libertarian movement, not necessarily a civil libertarian movement. And economic libertarianism objectively works out to the great benefit of the most wealthy. And it's just how it's playing out here, as you say.
So what do you have in terms of media down there to help you out, to get the word out? I take it that most of the media is pretty conservative. So, I mean, I'm assuming that because it's that way across the country.
I'm not sure who owns the Raleigh News and Observer, but their coverage has not been bad. It's not been bad. We have a very strong statewide public radio network, which has covered affairs quite well. We have a strong independent weekly, the classic free weekly running Tom Tomorrow's cartoon and so on, you know, the genre that I'm talking about.
Yeah, I think I interviewed a reporter from that, from the
The Independent.
Yeah, no, I think I was thinking of South Carolina, the capital.
Charleston. We have the internet down here too. So when you put all these things together, it's not been bad actually. I think that a lot of people have a fair idea of what's going on. Although, of course, to be perfectly candid, the people I run into day to day tend to be people who are politically attuned and already inclined to agree, so I may not have the most representative experience.
Well, I guess that's the challenge, to find out how many reasonable and educated people there are that are sufficiently motivated out of outrage at what's happened. You know, I mean, there's a kind of know-nothing quality to the Tea Party, and one of the most ignorant and reactionary members of the U.S. House of Representatives is down there in North Carolina, right? That Fox is her name? Do you know who I'm talking
about? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she's the stuff she says is just on the floor is appalling. It's mind-boggling.
There's a real tradition, I'm afraid, of that sort of thing in this state. This state has always had a divided political soul, which is one of the things that make it interesting, though interesting in that sort of devil sense, like the curse, you know, you live in interesting times. Mm-hmm. It's always had a progressive tradition for the South. It also used to send Jesse Helms to the Senate again and again and again. Major, massive racist, right-winger, red baiter. What we're trying to do with these protests is really exactly what you say. We are attempting to use civil disobedience for public education and public persuasion, trying to give people in North Carolina a sense that what this legislature is more than just a bunch of representatives passing some pieces of legislation. It's a coherent movement. It's linked to a national movement. It has an agenda and a vision of the good society, and both of those are far to the right. And we're trying to show people that those are the stakes of what's happening now. Those are the stakes of the next election. And that's why there's going to have to be some real effort to organize a progressive counter vision, which is part of what we're hoping these protests will be a seed toward growing.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Jedediah Purdy.
Ian, pleasure to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you again. I've just been speaking with Jedediah Birdy, who's a professor of law at Duke University, focusing on constitutional, environmental, and property law. He's been a fellow at the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School, an ethics fellow at Harvard University, and a visiting professor at Yale Law School and Harvard Law School. His forthcoming book is The American Environmental Imagination, and he has an article at the Huffington Post, Why I Got Arrested in Raleigh. The states are the new front line. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back looking into what makes the autocratic Turkish leader Erdogan tick.
Headed down south to the land of the pines. I'm thumbing my way to North Carolina. Staring up the road and pray to God I see headlights. I made it down the coast in 17 hours, picking me a bouquet of dogwood flowers. And I'm hoping for Raleigh, I can see my baby tonight.